Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting what you say. Today is the day.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings here for the 4th of November. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and joined in studio by Rachel Sutton and Paul Perot, the producers for the show that do such a great job bringing guests from around our country, because you know, if you listen, we need those guests to help us talk about the news and some of the special interest topics of the day from a distinctly Christian perspective. We certainly enjoy the various news sources in our country, but we don't attend to them and some of the bias that is there. We want our bias to be relative to the kingdom of God, for here at Faith Radio, we serve the King, Jesus Christ, of a kingdom that knows no end. And of course, Paul and Rachel this morning, we're heading towards Christmas. And it occurred to me that maybe we could actually start coming in and out of breaks more regularly with some Christmas music. Are you guys Christmas fans, Paul?
Oh, I love Christmas music.
So do you have a favorite song that you would pick that you want to at least get into one of our breaks here this morning?
Okay, you asked. Now, finally, I was thinking about it. You asked me beforehand. There are a couple of different ones that I really like. They're already in their system, by the way. Mercy Me has a knockout rendition of God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, which just good combination of orchestration and rock.
And that one's a little bit more off the beaten path. I mean, that's not one we sing in church very often or hear very often. So that's
God Rest Ye. What church do you go to, my friend?
Okay, fair enough. Do you have another one, Paul? You got to pick one, but if you've got another one you want to reference
Michael
this
W.
morning.
Smith, his version of Angels We Have Heard on High called Gloria.
That is a great one. Rachel, how about you? What do you like to roll with?
Yeah, you know, I have to choose Toby Mac because I just grew up with Toby Mac music. But this Christmas, Joy to the World is probably my favorite.
Yeah, obviously one of the more popular. At my church, we do sing that one, Paul, from time to time. But
I would say
for me, it's always been, for whatever reason, I try to come back to The Little Drummer Boy. I don't know why the third voice of third verse of that song just makes me cry. From King and Country has a version that we'll go to into break this morning as well. And if you're listening this morning, we would love to hear from you. You can call the studio or text at 877-933-2484. Again, it's 877-93-FAITH. And all morning long, if you want to send us your favorite Christmas song, we'll try to look it up in the archives. I mean, Paul, we have a pretty extensive archive list here,
extensive.
Do we not?
Yeah, pretty extensive.
So is there any concern about, you know, bringing listeners in with some of these songs? Because, you know, maybe they're going to come off the beaten trail with some of this. We've got to be able to perform if we're going to ask listeners
to
call
in. I do have one caveat. We will not do Grandma Got Run Over. But this is a grandma safe zone here, okay?
I think that's very fair. Well, if you're listening this morning, we would love to have you text or call the studio. Again, 877-93-FAITH. We'll do this between now and Christmas. We'd love to hear your favorite Christmas song, and we'll make sure that we find some version of it to come in and out of break. So welcome this morning to Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 9 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and usually on Tuesday mornings we are joined by Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation. The Daily Signal does a great job writing and covering events out of Washington, D.C., focusing so much on the executive branch and some of the policy decisions coming out of Washington. Tommy could not be with us this morning, so we found, also of the Heritage Foundation and the Daily Signal, Jarrett Stepman, who's going to help me talk through some of the headlines of the day. Good morning, Jarrett.
Good morning.
Well, great to have you on. I always try to warn our regular guests, Jarrett, that, you know, it's what have you done for me lately on Faith Radio Mornings. And so depending on how this goes, that might have been Tommy's last effort last week.
Well, I hope not. Tommy's a good guy. He's a smart guy, and he's very funny. I love seeing him around the office. He sometimes comes to visit me. He has a very genuine personality. He's a great guy.
Yeah, he does a great job covering so many of the news items of the day, and again, from an accessible standpoint. And Jarrett, we've been talking this morning, and again, if you're listening, we would love to have you text or call the studio at 877-93-FAITH with your favorite Christmas song. Jarrett, do you have one that you can boil it down to? That would be, if you could play it all Christmas season, what would it be?
Well, I'm very partial to, especially to O Holy Night. It's absolutely one of my favorites. Even the original German lyrics, I think, is a very beautiful song. But I'm also partial to I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas, the Bing Crosby version. So I have a little bit of a love for the kind of traditional Christmas music, especially from the 1950s version of some of those songs. So I would say those two are right there at the top of my list.
Yeah, the nostalgia of White Christmas and, of course, O Holy Night. That's a tough one for me to pick between that and Drummer Boy. Well, thanks for joining us this morning. I know there's lots to get to and some articles you've written and covered. And, of course, one of the main items in the news over the past probably 72 hours or so has been the passing of George H.W. Bush. And, Jarrett, he was one of the last presidents that actually served in combat.
He really was. In fact, he was the last president to have served in World War II. So I kind of see it as almost a passing of a generation. And Bush was certainly emblematic of that generation. I mean, he served very honorably in World War II, twice was shot down, actually, and his plane was nearly captured by the Japanese on one occasion. And I think his service, I think, speaks for itself. He never really talked about himself a whole lot, certainly in life, but I think his record shows that, you know, he was a very brave man, and he was a man who was a dedicated patriot and loved his country. And so I think the tributes that we're seeing right now, which have mostly been very positive, kind of show that, you know, whether you agree with President Bush or disagree with him on politics, you can see that he was a great patriot, a good man, and certainly a very good family man.
When you reference the tributes coming out, and so much of what has been said about George H.W. Bush is the service that he provided for our country, and it was a real other-centered, self-sacrificing kind of service. And that's part and partial, typically, with getting into the military, is there really is a desire to do something on behalf of others where life is not just solely about you.
Absolutely. I think that's a very good positive aspect. I think many people think of kind of the American elite that he was a part of, but he was really a part of one that decided that service was more important than just thinking about yourself. And I think his whole life very much demonstrated that. I think that's a positive trait. I think that's one maybe that's fading a little bit in America. But I think Bush certainly represented that, and I think that's why for many, you know, his passing certainly is a sad moment, but you know, we do have a lot of good memories, certainly, of him and his wife, who he seemed incredibly dedicated to and devoted to all those years, Barbara Bush. And so I think that the overwhelming consensus is very positive, despite a few, unfortunately, especially the Associated Press, which I think tweeted out something very tasteless when he passed. But I think mostly I think we've seen an overwhelmingly positive outpouring toward the former president.
Well, and in light of that, too, when I think about how divisive and rancorous it's become, especially over the past 2 years, Jarrett, is there a possibility that this pendulum swings back a little bit? There's been so much conversation about a man of integrity and character, and though had sharp differences with his political foes, still treated people well. Is there any potential for this pendulum where it's so divisive right now to swing back towards the center?
I think there is. I mean, we've had other acrimonious moments in our history, certainly, and I would say even a lot worse than we have it today. I think when you look at the long history of the United States, there has been moments where we've been incredibly divided, and things have patched up. I think that's absolutely true. So I don't think there's anything permanent in politics in this country. And yes, I think we're at a point where we're incredibly divided, and I think there's a lot of genuine reasons, a lot of policy differences, a lot of cultural differences that absolutely divide us. But I don't think we're stuck to permanently in the situation that we're in now.
Lots to get to this morning with Jared Stepman of the Heritage Foundation and Daily Signal, filling in ably and competently for Tommy Binion, who's away this week. And Jared, I saw some other news coming out of Washington, D.C., that it sounds like some senators are blocking some of the judicial appointment process. And that's been one of the hallmarks of Trump's presidency, is how many judges they've seen appointed. But are they blocking them relative to the Mueller investigation, that they want to make sure that Mueller is able to finish the investigation and doesn't get fired by Trump?
That is for some. Obviously, many of the Democrats who oppose those judicial nominations, I think, are doing so mostly because they just oppose judges appointed by a Republican president. I think that's pretty given. I think on the few cases, we do have one Republican senator in particular, Senator Jeff Flake, who's blocking nominations because he wants to see a particular piece of legislation that deals with the Mueller probe and specifically with executive officers appointed by the president. I think some of the problems with that is that the law itself that he insists on bringing to the floor before he gets a vote, I think there's many who question the constitutionality of the law of the Congress to essentially dictate to the president what officers he hires and fires. In fact, there's a very famous case in the 19th century that they tried to impeach President Andrew Johnson on, called the Tenure of Office Act, that was eventually struck down by the court. So I think the problem is in the situation, and a lot of these judges are very much, I would say, constitutional judges. It's a peculiar thing to be striking down constitutional judges through an unconstitutional law. So I think that is definitely going to be something that's going to be fought over the next few months. But the reality is that Senate composition is going to be even more skewed toward Republicans after the turnover in the next session comes through, and I think a lot of these judges are going to end up being passed through anyway. But it is something to be watching going ahead, because there are a lot of open positions available, and President Trump has already signed on to numerous judges. We almost have an unprecedented number of judges seats open right now.
It's fascinating to watch how all of these appointments are getting filled at such a rapid rate. And related to the Mueller investigation, before we take a short break, Jared, is there a sense in which this is coming to a conclusion? I read some news sources, and they are articulating that it's getting really close to Trump, and it's going to be really close to impeachment as soon as they come out with results. And other news sources will say there's nothing there but smoke and mirrors.
I think there's hope that that's the case, but as I spoke to Ken Starr, who was kind of the special prosecutor in the Whitewater investigation of Clinton, explained to me that these investigations can go on for a long time because there's such broad power that's given to an independent investigation like this. So I think there's some hope that it'll come to a quick resolution for the sake of the country, but I don't think that's guaranteed. This could certainly carry on well into 2019.
It'll be fascinating again to see the next couple of years. When we come back from break, you wrote an article that was related to the identity politics and the divisions and the sharp divisions that we have in our country that it seems like both Trump plays into and the Democratic Party plays into as well. So I want to get your sense on what we see in the next 18 months, 24 months, in the next election cycle with the presidency coming in 2020. So more with Jared Stepman. And as we go to break, we have a listener writing in with the greatest time of year as their choice for their favorite Christmas song. Are you in tears right now as we kind of play that 50s nostalgia music for you? You asked for your favorite Christmas song, and we came through right here. How are you processing this right now, Jarrett?
Well, that is so nice. I love the Bing Crosby. I just love it so much. You guys are so nice. That's a great thing to hear first thing in the morning.
Talking with Jared Stepman this morning of the Heritage Foundation and the Daily Signal about some of the news coming out of Washington, D.C. And Jared, you wrote an interesting article about how identity politics is really threatening the future of America. And I hear this phrase, identity politics, Jared, and I don't entirely know what it means. Can you give us a quick definition of what we're referencing when we use that phrase, identity politics?
Yeah, absolutely. It is something that I think is a little bit, I think, confusing on the face of it. What it boils down to really is this idea that who you are is boiled down to whatever group you're a participant. If you're, you know, a man, if you're a woman, your race, your gender, and these things ultimately are more important than who you are as an individual, what your individual traits are, what you believe in. And this idea also on top of this, which adds the identity politics part, is the idea that some groups are inherently oppressed by a majority. There's this idea that what they call intersectionality, which is this very bizarre word that I think has been cooked up on college campuses, the idea that there's an interlocking set of identities the person has that depends on where they are in the spectrum. They're more oppressed or they're less oppressed, and one person's opinions count more than others because of their identity. And I think it's this kind of style of politics, which was very common on college campuses in particular, has really poured out into mainstream America now. And I think it's something that we're becoming kind of used to. And I think it is dangerous in a country like the United States, which is a multi-ethnic nation, which has been for a long time and is based on this idea of assimilation and people trying to all become Americans and individualism to a certain extent. And the idea that, you know, your individual beliefs are and individual ideas are more important than just a group collective. So I think this kind of style of politics is certainly a challenge for our era, and has been growing for quite some time and will be into the future.
So is there a sense in which politicians are playing in or tapping into this identity politics in the way that they'll maybe go to a certain segment of the population and say that you're more empowered or less empowered, or they'll villainize other people that they sense are more empowered to realize their happiness or their dreams moving forward? And so they really exploit the idea that somebody feels disempowered and say, vote for me because I will empower you.
Absolutely. And they're willing to, I think, in extreme cases, violate somebody's individual rights to free speech and other. I think we look at our country's past as individual rights, as we define, especially in the Constitution, would protect those rights. They're willing to use identity and group identity to overcome those. Those are more important than things like freedom of speech. I think that's what we see as a huge problem.
We just lost Jarrett, Rachel. I think a little cell phone issue here. We'll see if we can capture Jarrett, but making a really important point about exploiting different peoples of different demographic segments and the different needs and perceptions that they have about moving forward. And politicians have been doing so much of that. Do we have Jarrett back in the line? Not at this point. I think, again, what Jarrett was trying to get to relative to the situation with the politicians is a good example of this would have been President Trump, in when he sort of turned the Democratic rust belt that typically was a stronghold of blue collar workers. And he really identified that segment of the population. And of course, was able to then win places like Wisconsin and Michigan that tended to be more Democratic strongholds because he played to that sort of base. And in dividing people up into the African-American population, maybe of the inner city in Chicago, or possibly the Hispanic population, politicians so often these days are attempting to try to divide us all up and win a particular vote segment. And the division happens because of the exploitation of people's sense that they're not empowered. And it's a really interesting conversation that Jarrett is going to head into. Tell you what, we're going to take a short break here and come back and see if we can get Jarrett back on the line for our last couple minutes to finish this thought.
Did you miss one of your favorite shows this week? Wish you could listen to that sermon again and again? Jump in the car partway through an interview that you wish you'd heard all of? Is there a show or an interview you heard that you would like to pass along to a friend? Download or share our free show podcasts at MyFaithRadio.com and listen anywhere, anytime. That's MyFaithRadio.com.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Morning. Short break. We're trying to locate Jarrett Stepman, who's been joining us talking about identity politics. And Jarrett, what, did White Christmas distract you a bit? Did you sort of just kind of, you know, run off the rails and start singing the Bing Crosby version?
Well, I kind of thought I had to listen to some Christmas music here and put it on. So it's always a temptation this time of year.
Well, we were talking about identity politics a bit, and you wrote a great article in the Daily Signal. I'd love for you to finish that thought in terms of how politicians are exploiting people that sense they're disempowered and will make these promises that they'll empower them if they'll just get their vote.
I think that's a big element of this, and I think it's a trend that it's been growing for some time. There was a great panel recently at the Heritage Foundation. I definitely encourage your viewers to watch, for people, I think, in many different parts of the political spectrum who worry about this growing problem that has grown on college campuses, now entered the mainstream and is used by politicians to divide us as a country. I think that's an incredibly important thing for Americans in particular. We are such a country that's based on many different ethnicities and many different groups of people that have come together as e pluribus unum. I think that's an important thing for our country. If we continue to divide ourselves into smaller and smaller groups and pit ourselves against one another, I think that will start to break up a country like the United States. And I think that's why it's important to grasp hold of our shared traditions, our shared history, religion, things like this. I think these are incredibly important things, and I think that's being broken down in modern times. So I definitely would say that this is among the most important issues of our era.
And Jared, we have just about a minute left here on this, and I think about the reference that you and I were making at the beginning of our segment to George H.W. Bush, who served in combat and really gave his life up in service. And I think about this desire for power that we all tend to have in American culture, and yet the call of the kingdom of God is to use whatever power we have on behalf of others. And there really is a tension in being a kingdom citizen sometimes versus being an American citizen.
Well, that's absolutely true, and I think you definitely see it during this time of year. I think something about the Christmas season in particular. I think people start to think about themselves and think, you know, what have I done in my life to help others around me, not just Americans, but those across the seas as well. And I think that is an important thing. I think it's an important trait that we've had in this country for a very long time. And I do hope that certainly around Christmas time, when you kind of see that these acts of charity and how much joy it brings to yourself and to others as well. I think we kind of lose sight about that. I think we always think, well, if we just do things for ourselves, we'll be happier people. But I think that the kind of idea of giving to others and service does make one a contented person, does make those around you a better as well. And I think that's an important thing that leads to greater happiness.
Well, Jared, thanks so much for joining us this morning with so many of the conversations coming out of Washington, D.C. I know you know Tommy as well. And if you see Tommy Binion sometime in the next week, greet him for us. I know he's preparing for the birth of their second child. And what a great time for that for the holiday season.
I absolutely will. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I loved it. Thanks so much, Jared. We're going to go into break with another listener's song, Coventry Carol from Allison Moyet. And when we come back for the second half of this hour, I'll be joined by Dr. Rosemary Stein. And we're going to talk a little bit about a new trend in marijuana vaping.
Tiny child, bye bye, Luli Lu.
I see that the grandson of the late Reverend Billy Graham is reflecting on President George H.W. Bush's life and his friendship with the Graham family. They spent a lot of time together with President Bush at the White House and vacationed together. He said he'll always remember the time George H.W. Bush spent at the Billy Graham Library dedication in 2007. Again, the friends that we are in circles with tell us a lot about who we are as people and who we choose to do life with. And again, another tribute and testimony to the faith and the character and the integrity of George H.W. Bush. And thanks as listeners too for texting in and calling in this morning. We've got a bank of Christmas songs we'll go to. You know, if you're listening, we're inviting you to call or text at 877-933-2484 with your favorite Christmas song this morning. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by Dr. Dan DeWitt, who's an expert in the writings of C.S. Lewis, and he was talking about a recent book released about the writings that Lewis did on the nature of prayer, and the two of us discussed, do our prayers really matter?
We're going to jump into, as my friend Matt Smethurst has once said, the deep end of the mystery pool. And so my students do wonder about that. I teach a theology course where we talk about providence and we talk about human responsibility and human free will, and exactly how do we make sense of these things. And Lewis was not afraid of talking about these issues. And so Lewis talks about them in Mere Christianity, the idea of free will. But then when Lewis describes his conversion in Surprised by Joy, he says that I was no more looking for God than a mouse looks for a cat. But God was the one who was taking all of the initiative. So we see this tension in Lewis, too, that we recognize God knows everything, but somehow there's this command to pray. And in letters to Malcolm, chiefly on prayer, and then also in this new book on prayer, you see Lewis trying to wrestle with this tension. We can't give up either ends, God's sovereignty or our responsibility. We have to live with the tension and with the mystery of how all that works.
Certainly appreciated Dan's reflections yesterday on the life and the ministry and so many of the writings of C.S. Lewis and the apologetics that Lewis wrote about in terms of defending the faith. If you want to catch that entire segment, head to myfaithradio.com. You can search for Dan DeWitt or C.S. Lewis and hear all of what he had to say yesterday. Well, I see that Dr. Rosemary Stein is on the line already, and in just a minute, we're going to talk about how vaping marijuana is even more dangerous than just normal smoking it, and the rise in the proliferation, Rachel Sutton, this morning, of marijuana.
Forgive and forget. The two are often paired together, but they don't have to be. This is Jim Garlow. Forgiving doesn't necessarily mean forgetting. Now, God forgets. The Bible tells us He forgets our sins, holds them against us no more. You, on the other hand, don't have to forget. You don't just shut off your brain, but we are commanded to forgive. In fact, we're told if we don't forgive, neither will we be forgiven. We all need His forgiveness. So let me encourage you to do this. List any unforgiven wrongs and release them. The secret to a more fulfilled life is learning to forgive and forgive quickly. Don't hold on to your grudges. You'll discover added peace in your soul, and people around you will notice it. In a culture all too prone to grudges and vilification, make a forgiving heart item number one on your prayer list. This is Jim Garlow.
For a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, the medicine go down, medicine.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. At about 19 minutes before the top of the hour, I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and we're joined at the line on the line at this time by Dr. Rosemary Stein, who joins us regularly to talk about so many of the issues that are confronting us as parents and grandparents and families with our teens, with our young people. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning, Peter.
So we were in Epcot Center last week, and the one character photo we got was with Mary Poppins. So I think about your lead-in music there. Are you looking forward to the new Mary Poppins movie coming out here during the holiday season?
I really am. I loved Mary Poppins growing up, and Hannah and I will just have to do that all over the holidays. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, she was a bit stern as a character, I have to say. There was really no give or any break in her persona at all relative to smiling. Are we sort of hopeful that we have a softer Mary Poppins this time around?
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. No, Mary Poppins has to sort of, she has to not take herself too seriously. So if she doesn't smile, I don't know that that's really who Mary Poppins is. I think that Julie Andrews was really the classic Mary Poppins, where she knew exactly how to love on the children and for them to love her, but also have fun with her.
Well, it's certainly going to be a hard act to follow Julie Andrews from that performance at that time. And Rosemary, I see in some of the articles sent as we talk about so many of the things affecting our young people and our families that the rise of marijuana usage in various forms, it really seems to be gaining a momentum that is not going to lose steam anytime soon. And it seems to be used for just about everything these days in terms of an excuse to use it. I was exercising yesterday, got a blister on my foot, and it just, you know, seems like, gosh, I could really benefit, I suppose, from marijuana to dull the pain of that. I mean, are we seeing this kind of rise of marijuana relative to usage around our country?
You know, it's what you said is almost funny, except that, you know, it in real life it wouldn't be funny.
Absolutely.
Because that is exactly how kids are thinking about it. And the reason that they're thinking about it that way is not just those dumb kids. We're actually giving them that message. And it's everywhere because it's being legalized, medical marijuana, it's good for this, it's good for that. And once again, folks, I'm a pediatrician of 20-some years. I have my own practice. It's been close to 20 years. I haven't had one patient that's actually medically benefited from marijuana. Think about that. That's a lot. I mean, that's a lot of patients you're talking about. Probably tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of patients. So some people say, well, Dr. Rose, that's all anecdotal what you're saying, and that marijuana is the new drug of the future. Well, I'm not seeing it. But when it comes to this vaping thing, that's really, really dangerous, because not only is our marijuana up to, well, tens of times stronger than the marijuana that was used back in the 60s and 70s. Think about that. But through vaping, it gets into the bloodstream so much faster. I mean, it's just like this big load, a rush of marijuana that goes straight to the brain and changes not an adult, but a child's mind, their brain, forever. So each one of those inhalations is going to change that brain forever. Whenever I see an unmotivated kid, I ask myself, is this kid smoking marijuana? And many, many, many times, the answer is yes.
Well, and it's so interesting you reference the fact that in your 20 years of being a pediatrician, you have not seen the benefits of marijuana, at least how they're typically outlined. In fact, there's some drawbacks to that. But there really seems to be a difference between some of the social momentum and political momentum in our country versus what seems to be true across most practitioners, saying that the research demonstrates it's not all that helpful. And there's some pretty significant side effects.
Yes, and I'm not saying there... Once again, I'm not saying that there could not be. It's just that I have not seen that. And in that long a time, you would have thought I would have heard one good personal story. I see them out there when, you know, in the media, but a personal story, a child that I know or I know through a colleague, I've not seen that.
Well, I'd be curious. We just had a listener call in, Rosemary, and was suggesting that marijuana could be considered a cure for colon and other cancers. And is there a difference maybe between curing a cancer and possibly helping to alleviate the pain from cancer?
Oh, absolutely. I can't see that at the moment we are now in our scientific studies that it's going to be a cure. Now, it obviously will help alleviate the pain, but it's not going to be a cure. And there's so many other ways to alleviate pain that I'm not sure that marijuana, is, because of all the other baggage that comes with it, I'm not sure that it's going to be your best choice, because it's going to leave the room open for our children. Once again, it's the children I'm really concerned about. If an adult does something in his own time in his home and it's legalized in your state, I don't have a problem with that. My real problem comes because my whole life, my dedication is about kids. And when they see us doing certain things, they think that it's okay. And there's a big difference between what it does to an adult and what it does to a child. And I consider a child anybody under 21.
And you certainly deal with children all week as part of your practice. And do we sometimes underestimate how impressionable our children are relative to being influenced by what we as adults are doing?
Absolutely. And it's as much as what we don't say as what we do say. And so when we don't give them our perspective, our experience, they take away a big message. And even if you're not giving them that message, they're receiving that message through social media, through school, through their friends. And so they have their own load of information. So if you think your kids don't listen to you, it's still important to get that message out. I try to talk to my patients about marijuana, about waiting for sexual activity every time I get a chance, because I figure each one of those times, it's going to get in there and it's going to make some sort of difference, and they're going to think about it, even if they look like they're not listening to me.
Talking with Dr. Rosemary Stein this morning and starting the conversation with some of what's happening in our country relative to the social and political momentum around marijuana. Dr. Stein, when we come back from break, I see that there's also some news in the headlines about the rise of measles again. Something that we thought was eradicated around the world seems to be popping up in various countries in pretty substantial rates. So I want to get your perspective on that next on Faith Radio Mornings. And we'll head to break with a listener request for Sweet Little Jesus Boy by Take Six.
Oh, sweet little Jesus toy, born in a manger. Oh,
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here at about 9 minutes before the top of the hour. And we are taking calls and texts from you as listeners all morning about your favorite Christmas music. We certainly love our Christmas music around here at Faith Radio Mornings. And Dr. Stein, do you have a specific favorite Christmas song that you can boil it down to?
I have two. The first one is Hark the Herald Angels Sing, which is an old favorite. And the other one is What Child Is This?
Yeah, those are both, boy, when we sing those, there's something about singing these songs during this season in which we turn our eyes towards the King and the birth of our King. It really, it anchors us in different ways, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It just reminds us what this whole season is about in the middle of the hustle bustle.
Absolutely. Well, we're talking about some of the different medical and psychological social issues affecting our youth as we do every couple of weeks with Dr. Stein. And Rosemary, I saw that there seems to be the rise of measles that's happening around the world. I know when I was growing up in the 1970s that getting your measles and mumps vaccines was sort of it was the big thing back then to make sure. And then it seemed like things were eradicated. And I haven't heard much about measles and mumps until maybe the last couple of years. What are we seeing with the rise of measles right now?
Well, I have a very interesting perspective when it comes to it, because I try to help parents make the decisions for themselves about giving vaccinations. And so most of my patients in my practice are vaccinated, but I do allow for the parents to go back and research things. And so they come over with a lot of questions. And most parents will make the decisions to vaccinate their children. But regarding the measles, my personal experience is very funny because I did receive the right vaccinations as an infant and then again as an older child, but I still caught the measles. I got the measles in medical school from a patient who had the measles. And, you know, I didn't think I had anything to be concerned about because I had been vaccinated. And here I am going through my final exams as I'm about to graduate medical school, and I had the measles. It was terrible. I was so sick. I felt like I was going to die. I was taking my finals. Thank goodness I was able to pass the finals and do reasonably well. But I felt like I was going to die. And so now that we talk about vaccination so much, I really question the effectiveness of a lot of our vaccines. And sometimes when these things happen and we say, oh, it's because not enough people are vaccinated, well, then I know from personal experience that it's not just because we're not vaccinating enough population. It's also because the effectiveness of the vaccine is not lifelong. And so when we expose people that perhaps it maybe didn't get the batch of vaccination that wasn't as effective, or that the effectivity of that vaccination just decreased as life went on, well, you're going to have some of these diseases. So it's not all because people are not vaccinating themselves. It's also because, you know, that vaccinations do wear out with time.
Well, and certainly that's not a message we hear very often, but as part of this, Dr. Stein, that as human beings, we're always dynamically changing. Things are constantly shifting. And so there's not necessarily a one-to-one relationship between some sort of treatment and some sort of result. These things are very complex.
Yes, it is. And I, once again, it's best to leave it to common sense. If there is contagious disease outbreak, it's best not to go in public with our families. It's best not to go out with newborn children. It's best to make sure that we're washing our hands. If we go out shopping, that we clean and sanitize where other people have been. These are things that just make a lot of sense, apart from read for yourself. See, you know, the validity of certain vaccines. Don't just do it because everybody's doing it. We got to read and be very knowledgeable so that we know how to protect and take care of our families.
Well, and certainly there is a lot of conversation going on around measles among some families in the United States, where if you get into some of the social media channels and somebody suggests that they're objecting to taking the measles vaccine, maybe for religious usage or concerned about other side effects of that and giving vaccines to very young people, boy, you want to talk about developing some vitriol and people getting so angry because they believe they're putting their child at risk if you choose not to vaccinate. How do you handle this particular conversation among families?
That's a great question, because I once had a mom from another practice call up and be very aggressive with the practice employees and myself, saying, so how do you let patients come in if they're not vaccinated? And you know, I didn't spend a lot of time with her on the phone, but my thought is because each parent would hopefully know what's good for their child. And so that's sort of the spirit that I want to give to parents is that you have in your heart, when you pray for your child, when you know your child, you arm yourself with knowledge, but also with prayer, and you have in your heart what I believe that you know best for your child and for your family. And so that's the avenue that I use the most is you know, you guys, I can just give you information. You're the steward of your child. I am not. I am merely your child's physician, and I'm here to help you to make the right decisions.
Well, Dr. Stein, we sure appreciate you coming on as often as you do to talk about so many of these issues facing families from a psychological, social, and physical standpoint with our kids. And I see that Rachel Sutton already has ready for you your favorite Christmas song, at least one of the two that you chose, and it's Hark the Herald Angels Sing. So look forward to chatting with you again in a couple of weeks, Dr. Stein.
Well, thank you so much. Hark the Herald Angels Sing.
Well, here it comes. I always appreciate the perspective of Dr. Rosemary Stein on so many of these issues. And I see coming up in hour two, we're going to be joined by Dr. Ed Stetzer. And he's going to talk a little bit about the situation with the missionary, John Allen Chow, who was killed going to a very remote island. So stay tuned for hour two of Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.